I lived somewhere in Vrindavan, if there was no Krishna Balaram Mandir, I was thinking to myself, where would I like to live? What temple would I like to be near? Because the people who go to the Radha Govindaji temple, they're all people who live near there. The people who go to Radha Madan Mohan, they live near there. So where would I like to live? And I thought about it and thought about it, and I thought, I think I would like to live near this temple. Because the atmosphere is very simple. That's the pujari Nittai that I was just talking to. He's very austere. He's been taking care of the devotees, the deities, for a very long, long time. And he's very simple. He's kind of very non-envious sort of a person. And he has a lot of feeling for taking care of the deities here. So he gave some Mahaprasad. We should take some now. The temple that attracted me to, when I was thinking like that, I would like to live here. If I had to live somewhere other than the Krishna Balaram Mandir. But it also had to do with the samadhis that are outside. So we will have a look outside and you can see that this is a very potent place. Right? It's small, it's nicely maintained. It's never been very run down, although it's poor and it's not a rich temple. And over the years here also a lot of little improvements have come, just like these gates here and all this wire mesh outside, which I would imagine primarily has to do with keeping out monkeys and other animals. At one time, a long time ago now, we decided that it would be really nice to fix Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's Samadhi, which is out in the Samadhi garden. And so that particular year, I think it was 1994, when I was traveling to New Zealand and to Melbourne and other places, I collected donations from all the devotees to fix that samadhi. And we had the help of Achyuta Prabhu, who was the one who completed Srila Prabhupada's samadhi near the Krishna Balaram temple, our own samadhi of Prabhupada. And so he got all the pieces carved to completely replica the samadhi of Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. And it was all bought here, ready to be set up. And I think it was maybe 1995 or 1996 that I came again, found all the pieces had arrived, but a controversy had arisen over a very Indian controversy. The controversy was on the basis that actually we would like to expand the whole samadhi area, so why make this one samadhi new when it would be better if we could make the whole area bigger? And so it came to an impasse. And we went and spoke to the people who were in charge of the temple and asked them, you know, still, it may take you a long time before you can get the whole area renovated. Why not at least accept this offering? We have, you know, brought the whole samadhi here. We've got the whole thing here. But for some reason or another, it wasn't accepted. And so we would come here year after year. And Nittai was a little bit like, he wanted it to happen, but somehow or other it just didn't happen, and the pieces were left there. And I assume by now there's still some pieces left there, maybe, but some pieces have gone. And I don't know whether one day they will suddenly say, oh, look, we've got this whole samadhi here. Or if they'll say, well, we just need to carve a few pieces more and we can set this up. But it was not accepted. I understood how the Jayapur Mandir must have felt. And he went to all that trouble to build that whole palace and the temple and everything, and then the pundits, for their own reasons, decided, no, we don't want to move the deities in here. In the long term, we don't want to do this. So it was not actually erected, but all the pieces are there, well carved and so forth. So Radha Gokulananda is a little deity, only about this big, brass deity. It's said to be the deity that Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur worshipped. And Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur is not so many generations back in our disciplic succession. Do you have the songbook there? I don't know whether it's in here, but some places there's a list of our disciplic succession. I don't know if there's one in here. But I think Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur appeared before Baladev Vidyabhushan. Baladev Vidyabhushan appeared before Jagannath Das Babaji. Or they're worshipped in that order. So the deities of, you can see up there, it says Baladev Vidyabhushan's deity was Radha Vijay Govinda. Lokanath Goswami's deity was Radha Vinod. And the Mahaprabhu on this side, we'll go and have another look after we've heard a little bit so you know who you're looking at. Mahaprabhu's, it belongs to, the Seva was Narottam Das Thakur. And then also they have here one, Govardhan Shila that is just out open now, so devotees are coming for darshan. And that Govardhan Shila, it is said Lord Chaitanya gave that Shila for the savour of Raghunath Das Goswami. So there's quite a lot of transcendental personalities, deities being worshipped here. And in the courtyard, here we have the Samadhi of Lokanath Goswami, his deity Radha Vinod, a Pratibhu deity, the original deity was taken to Jayapur. But the worshipped here is Radha Vinod, and the Samadhi of Lokanath Goswami is outside. Lokanath Goswami was the spiritual master of Narottam Das Thakur. So Narottam Das Thakur's deity is here, Mahaprabhu, and his samadhi is also outside. And then after that, maybe one generation or two generations comes Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, his deity is here, his samadhi has also been brought to the outside. And then after him comes Baladev Vidyabhushan, his deity is here, but his samadhi is not. So that is the deities and the relationship to the samadhis. And so what we'll do is we'll go outside and walk around those samadhis. Just a little about those personalities. Lokanath Das Goswami was a bit of a loner. He was a close friend of Lord Chaitanya when they grew up together. But when Lord Chaitanya was going to take sannyas, he knew that Lokanath Das Goswami wouldn't be able to tolerate this, because of the nature of his nature and their relationship. And so he instructed Lokanath to come to Vrindavan. So Lokanath obeyed Lord Chaitanya's order, and he came to Vrindavan. But then he was feeling such acute separation because he was here prior to the six Goswamis. And so at some point he started thinking that maybe I shouldn't be here, maybe I should go and join him. Maybe I should go to where Lord Chaitanya is. So he headed towards Prayag on his way to Jagannath Puri. And then he was told that Lord Chaitanya had gone to South India. So then he went down towards South India thinking, I'll meet him there. But by the time he got some distance towards South India, he was told that Lord Chaitanya was back in Jagannath Puri. So then he was decided, I'll go to Jagannath Puri. And he's on his way again to Jagannath Puri. And he's told that now Lord Chaitanya is in Vrindavan. And by that time he was feeling such separation because he had been asked ahead of time to stay here in Vrindavan. So Lord Chaitanya appeared to him and pacified him and encouraged him to please come back to Vrindavan. So just imagine how you'd feel if you were thinking, I'm going to miss him everywhere, and he'd said, stay in Vrindavan. Mm-hmm. And then he came to Vrindavan and he weren't even there then. So basically he was not meant to see Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in his sannyas mood. His mood of love for Lord Chaitanya was different. But so he came back here, and he was always accompanied by one very, very close associate of his called Bhargava Goswami. It's said sometimes about them that Bhargava Goswami and Lokanath Goswami were like two bodies with one soul. They were so intimately connected, and they would wander around all parts of Vrindavan before the six Goswamis came and started their excavationary work. And Lokanath Goswami was so humble And he was so renounced and so reserved that he didn't want to accept any disciples, not any at all. And he also instructed Krishnadas Kaviraj when writing the Chaitanya Chaitamrita not to put his name in there. So his name is only briefly mentioned because of his reservation. But then when Narottam Das Thakur came to Vrindavan and he took shelter of Jiva Goswami, and that by that time Lokanath Goswami must have been extremely elderly at that particular time, then there was Jiva Goswami was living at Radha Damodar, which we're going to go to. He was in charge of all the... He was the authority that all the Vaishnavas submitted to. And Srinivasacharya, Narottam Das Thakur, and one other, Shyamananda, these three Vaishnavas came, Shyamananda from Orissa, and Srinivas and Narottam came individually, separately from Bengal. And these three began studying under Sri Jiva Goswami. And they were all outstanding. And everyone, all the Vaishnavas here recognized these three personalities are exceptional. So they stayed here for some time as young students of Srila Jiva Goswami. And then Jiva Goswami asked them to take the Goswami literature back to Bengal and Orissa. So he sent them on out of Vrindavan back to their, basically back to where they had come from. So before that time, Narottam Das, who was very, as we heard once before, Narottam was the son of a king. We talked a little bit about Narottam on his disappearance day, I think. So Narottam Das Thakur was the son of a king living in what's now Bangladesh. And he came here and renounced his family and he took shelter of Jiva Goswami. But Jiva Goswami was not giving diksha, only shiksha. So Srinivasacharya took his diksha here at the Radharaman temple from Gopal Bhatta Goswami. And Gopal Bhatta Goswami generally was giving initiation and Jiva Goswami was giving instructions and teachings. But Narottam Das felt very keenly attracted towards Lokanath Goswami. And Lokanath Goswami had taken a vow, no disciples. I don't want any worship, I don't want anything. So then Narottam Das Thakur was very eager. He approached him a few times, but Lokanath Goswami was firm. So Narottam Das Thakur took it as a very, what you could imagine, if you could think of what would be the most menial service you could do for a person. You could say, you know, you could clean, wash their, after they eat, you could wash their plates. You know, after they change their clothes, you could wash them. That's quite menial. But the most menial thing that you could do for a person would be to clean up after they evacuate. And that's basically what Narottam Das Thakur would do. Lokanath Goswami would go to some place and he would do his bath, toilet and bathroom activities there. And Narottam Das Thakur would meticulously clean up after this. And after some time, Lokanath Goswami noted this, that somebody's coming here and cleaning. What is this? And so he stayed to see who's doing this. And he found Narottam Das Thakur. And he said, why are you doing this? I don't want to accept any service. But Narottam Das was very emphatic. I want to become your servant. So over a long period of time, Narottam Das kept begging Lokanath Goswami to please accept me as your disciple. And eventually Lokanath Das, his heart softened and he accepted Narottam. And even to this day in Kettari, which was the place where Narottam returned to, there's a big stone there that they worship. And it has like a crack in it. It's a long stone and it says that this is a sitting place where Narottam Das sat for that big first Gaur Purnima festival that Narottam arranged. And Lokanath Goswami sat here and Narottam Das Thakur sat there. So Lokanath was very humble, very reserved, and yet at the same time, he accepted this one disciple, Narottam Das Thakur. Then Narottam, he took many disciples, but mostly in Bengal. And Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, he came from Bengal, he was a householder. He left his village, he left his family, and he came here to Vrindavan. And he was very much criticized. Of course, we wouldn't criticize him, but he was criticized at the time because he innovated insofar as all the previous Goswamis had written all their literature in Sanskrit. But Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, he wrote all of his Gaudiya Vaishnava literature in Bengali. So we wouldn't consider that a big error. But it was considered at the time, because of the stature of learning of the various individuals, that this was not very proper. But Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur had a particular mood also. And he wrote, as we know, we've spoken of, all the little inserts of Krishna Leela, this little thing, that little thing, all sorts of interesting little details. Srila Sanatana Goswami also did that. But Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur, although also extremely scholarly and very well versed in philosophy, he is especially noted for having given so many little personal details of the pastimes in the Srimad Bhagavatam. So when Srila Prabhupada presented both the Bhagavad Gita and the Srimad Bhagavatam, he had before him many commentaries. When he was presenting the Bhagavad Gita, Srila Prabhupada was inspired to accept as his foremost commentary the commentary of Srila Baladeva Vibhushan, who is a disciple of Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur, whose presentation was primarily very, very scholarly and philosophical. And Srila Prabhupada went more with his version than he did with Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur. But in his presentation of the Srimad Bhagavatam, where Srila Prabhupada had Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur, Sanatan Goswami and Sridhar Swami, three famous books that he would carry around with him wherever he traveled. Prabhupada's translator, he'd have a translator, he had a bag. In his bag he had these big books like this. And in the early morning hours, Srila Prabhupada would ponder through these books, both the Bengali and the Sanskrit he could read. And he would take from these books and extract what he wanted to put into his Bhaktivedanta purports. So it's not that we say Prabhupada's books. Sometimes I've found, especially living in India, that we use that term, and it's quite comfortable to use the term in the West, but in India it sounds funny, because then they say, well, your Prabhupada's books, what are they? We say, Bhagavad Gita. Oh, we know Bhagavad Gita. We've known Bhagavad Gita for thousands of years. Well, how are that is your Swami's books? Or Bhagavatam, it's Prabhupada's books. So you can see we're coming with a different perspective as Westerners. But to the people here, these books are timeless books. They're not Prabhupada's books. So then we have to understand it is what is Prabhupada's is his translation and his commentary, his purports, is how he has illuminated the Srimad Bhagavatam to give it a relevance and an importance for us. And we can understand without being disloyal in our outlook that in the future further acharyas will come, naturally enough, and they will also illuminate on the Srimad Bhagavatam and Bhagavad Gita and so on and so forth, according to time, place and circumstances for those people who they are responsible for. But it's very likely that many of them will use Srila Prabhupada's own translation and commentary as one of their references, a very strong reference if they're actually writing in English. So in this way we can put ourselves in proper perspective with the whole. When we're living in the West, we don't have that challenge so much. But it's coming. Now there are many different organizations, different institutions who are also initiating Westerners, some in our line, some in different lines, but with some leaning towards Lord Chaitanya and Lord Chaitanya's teachings. So there's a quote, I think I actually have it with me, if you could hand me my little red and black book, that I found one time in one of the articles in Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur's magazine called The Harmonist, that says, the Gaudiya literature will be translated, and this is written in The Harmonist in the early 1930s, not what now, that we're all present. So if you think back to that time when nobody ever thought that any of this literature would go to the West. The Gaudiya literature will be translated into all the languages of the world by the agents of the divine mercy at the appointed time. There will also no doubt spring up a mighty host of pseudo-exponents and an immense body of spurious Gaudiya literature, as has been the case in the past. So we see both. There's genuine Gaudiya literature and there's all kinds of bogus Gaudiya literature. It will all go to the West and it will all spread everywhere, as it has been here. This is to be expected by any really thoughtful person. Yet nothing can have the least power of depriving a person of the mercy of the real agents of divine mercy, except one's deliberate refusal to avail oneself of the same when it is offered at his very doorstep in a perfectly recognizable form. Then he goes on to say, as soon as a single person conceives a sincere desire of undertaking the promulgation of the tidings of the Gaudiya literature to the people of this world, he is thereby enrolled amongst the agents of divine mercy with power to forward the fulfillment of this expressed wish of the Supreme Lord. The Gaudiya literature will no longer remain confined to the Bengali-speaking people. It will in a short time expand and display its full brilliance through the medium of all the languages of this world, including those of the birds. Wait, we'll wait until we close the door. So listen to this. The Gaudiya literature will no longer remain confined to the Bengali-speaking people. It will in a short time expand and display its full brilliancy through the medium of all the languages, including those of the birds, beasts, and the vegetable tribes.
Vegetable tribes.
So that's quite extraordinary, isn't it? I chose that, I keep that one there, I read it every now and again when I want to blow my mind a bit. trying to conceive of how the vegetable tribes will be reading the Gaudiya literature. So there is things going on beyond our gaze, we should understand that. So these personalities, all of them, Lokanath, Narottam, Vishwanath, Baladev Vijayabhushan, and of course our predecessor Raghunath Das Goswami, they're all exalted key figures in the development of the Gaudiya literature, which develops and comes to us through the hands of Srila Prabhupada. But it's valuable for us to know that Srila Prabhupada has one hand reaching out to us, but one hand extended backwards towards these personalities, and likewise each one of them are holding like that. And also ourselves, we have to reach out with one hand to help other people, and one hand has to be holding firmly onto the Guru Parampara, the disciplic succession. Otherwise, we'll end up two hands to the world, and we'll fall over, boom. We need the balance of one hand towards others, and one hand towards for us, for all of us, basically, towards Srila Prabhupada, because he is our rock, solid founder acharya, to whom we all owe our lives, actually. And without him, none of us would be sitting here. Not one of us would have wandered our way in here and come to any of the appropriate conclusions that would allow us to sit and listen to this subject matter. So we owe everything to Srila Prabhupada in this mood. So maybe we can... This is, as I said, a very nice place for sitting, very pleasant pujari, he's very respectful to ISKCON devotees. I think ISKCON devotees probably did most of this renovation work around here. Some ISKCON devotees live just behind here, and they've done. So there's a nice rapport here. So we'll go from here. This, as I said, a small temple, so then there's this mood. We'll go next to the Radharaman temple.